Okay, so our goal is to start our week just a few minutes with something that really, hopefully, can reorient our whole week, our whole life, in refreshing our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Best way to start the week. So to do that, we're going to start with one piece of an amazing, amazing sefer. It's called Chovas HaTalmidim. The author of this book, you could argue, is one of the most influential, in some respects, right now, influential Torah personalities of the 20th century, even though he was murdered outside of a work camp near Lublin called Troniki in 1943, just a couple weeks ago. That was Dalid Cheshvan. Last week, his Yartzeit was last week. He was born in 1888. His father was a Rebbe. His name was Rebbe Elimelech of Grozitsk, but his father died when he was 3 years old. So he was raised by his mother and by a group of Hasidim, but he was recognized to be really extraordinary as a young man. He was married, I think he was 15 years old when he got married, and he was very close to his wife. We'll talk about that in a second, but I just want you to understand who he was. He became a Rebbe at the age of 20. In 1909, he becomes the Rebbe of the small town, which was a suburb of Warsaw, called Piasecna. You take a little train from Warsaw, you get to Piasecna. His focus in his Rebbestva was on kids. Even though he was sought after by thousands of people all over Poland, all over Europe, he prioritized kids. Like, if people came to meet with him, his priority was meeting with students. He started a yeshiva. His wife, Rachel, she was the descendant of the Koznetzer Magid, Rav Yisrael Hapstein. Her father, Rav Moshe Hapstein, was a direct descendant of the Koznetzer Magid. So he named his yeshiva Das Moshe. In the end of the late 1920s, he starts writing a book about education. There are now, if you want to buy it, there are actually two different English translations of this book that have been translated in the last, I would say, 30 years. You could argue, and you ask educators today, they'll tell you, this was one of the most almost prophetic books about education, because what he articulates here in a Hebrew concept is what today academics called child-centered education. That you can't take a bunch of kids and sit them on wood benches in a cheder and expect that that's going to educate them in the 20th century. It doesn't work anymore, he says. So he publishes this. He then writes a follow-up, If You Master This Book, which is a high level of tzidkus. Halavai, we can master that. He has a follow-up book called Hachsharas Avreichim. Mavo Sha'arim comes after that. But in 1939, just the postscript to this story, the Rebbe is found in Warsaw, and at the beginning of the bombing of Warsaw, he's trapped there with his family. His wife, who he was very close to, there was a ksav that he had written in his closet that had different handwriting. So he said to one of the Talmidim afterwards, yeah, that's because when I finished, I had to run out for something. My wife finished writing the other half. So she died in 1937. The day after Yom Kippur, there was, in the bombing of Warsaw, you know, the first 6 weeks of the war, his son was in a building that was hit by a bomb, and he was sent to the hospital. The day after that, his daughter-in-law was killed. So this was right before Sukkot. On the second day of Chol HaMoed Sukkot, his son died from his wounds. His daughter-in-law had died, then his mother also died that very short period, the beginning of the war, and after 2 weeks, he was all alone. And yet, somehow, he managed to find within himself the strength not only to continue, but to lead. You know, there were small groups of Hasidim at that first Simchas Torah. People were scattering all over the place, but he actually had hakafos. After his son passed away just 3 days before, 4 days before, he managed to get people together for hakafos, and he started gathering small groups every Shabbos, and he gave drushos. He took these drushos, he wrote them down. Next week in Mirat Hashem, I'll bring you so you can actually see I have a copy of the Rebbe's Xeroxed handwriting. In the ghetto, while everything is going on, he's giving sermons. He writes them down, he then edits them in 1943. It's a long story how he gets them to a guy who's connected to the underground archive, the Onik Shabbos. They put them in a metal can, together with his diary called Sava Ziruz and the Hachsharas of Rechem we mentioned before, some Jew, some Yid who's working on the archives, buries them. Okay. The Rebbe survives the liquidation of the Warsaw Ghetto, but then he works in a shoe factory called the Schultz Shoe Factory in 1943. The ghetto was destroyed over Pesach. The uprising starts Erev Pesach. The ghetto was destroyed over Pesach. Next couple weeks, he's sent to the shoe factory. From the shoe factory, they sent him to this labor camp called Troniki. And then in the fall, they annihilate everybody in the camp. Why was he still in the camp? He was famous Rebbe. They sent papers for him. But when he was in Troniki, he had a pact. There was a group of Jews there, many of them not religious, but they were chashev yidden, intellectuals, artists, people, very chashev people who were known in the camp. And they made a pact with each other that they would not leave one without the other. They wouldn't abandon the people if either they were all going to be liberated or none of them. So the Rebbe stayed with these other Jews, and that's how he died, with these other Jews. Fast forward another 10 plus years, some Polish construction worker is digging in the ghetto, and they find a metal can, they pull it up, they open it up, and it has Hebrew manuscripts in it. There's a letter. The letter on the top says, if there are any rabbis in Poland, please give this to a rabbi in Poland. If there's no rabbis left at all in Poland, which obviously there were not, the author says, please give this to my brother. The author was Rav Klonimus Kalman Shapira, the Piasetzner Rebbe. He had a brother who was known as the pioneering Admor Chalutz, who had gone to Tel Aviv years before. So his brother went to Tel Aviv. So he says in the letter, please send it to my brother. So they, crazy story through the Jewish agency, they get these manuscripts, which are written in Hebrew, with the Yiddish letter. They send it to the brother in Tel Aviv, and he publishes it under the title Eish Kodesh. And that's how, if you become familiar, if you listen, my Rebbe, my teacher, Rav Moshe Weinberger, his shul is called Eish Kodesh, because it's named after the Eish Kodesh. The Rebbe himself, just an interesting footnote, and then we'll get started, because today we're just going to do the first three words. Don't worry, we're going to end on time. It's called Eish Kodesh, because that's what his brother called it. He called them Drashos, sermons, Mishnos Hazam, from the years of wrath. He actually didn't call it Eish Kodesh. His brother called it Eish Kodesh, and that's how he became known as the Eish Kodesh, the Holy Fire. So he writes this book. This is called Chovas HaTalmidim. It's written for teenagers, Bachrim, yeshiva boys. And I think this is important for us, because perhaps part of the goal of just taking a few minutes, especially it's good on a Sunday morning, everyone's still a little bit chilled, nobody's been home yet, to open our mind and open our imagination. Because we're not in high school anymore. But what does it mean to take, just for a few minutes, a fresh look at life? And this sefer, it's mamish, and we're not going to do the whole sefer, we're just going to spend a couple weeks on one piece. It's like a lightning rod for spiritual imagination, for rethinking ourselves. So he starts off, the Rebbe says, the first perek is Kriya El HaTalmid. It's a call to the kids, to the students, to us, we the Talmidim. Ashrecha Na'ar Yisrael. That's all we're going to do today. Ashrecha, how would you translate the word Ashrecha? What's that?
Praise.
Praiseworthy. Okay, that's one translation. How else would you translate Ashrei? What's that?
Is it rich?
Yeah. Osher is happiness with Aleph. Right? In the modern Hebrew, you say, Osher ve'Osher. Happiness and wealth. Right? It's like a phrase. So, praiseworthy and fulfilled. I want to come back to that in one second. Na'ar Yisrael. A young person. The youth. And that's us. We're young people. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, he says that the Torah, it forbids us, it asers us from being old. There's an iser on being old. What does Rabbi Nachman mean? It's an iser to be old. What do you think it means?
Close up your mind to learn new things.
Okay. apparently in the news, a 90-year-old man went to space this past week, right? What's that?
I can't believe William Shatner is 90 years old.
What is Reb Nachman saying? Reb Nachman is saying, you have people, we all know people like this. Some of us have grandmothers like this. Some of us have people we know. They might be 80 years old, and they're very young. And then there are people who we know, it's crazy and it's the saddest thing in the world. There are people that we know who are 20 years old, and their mom is so old. What does it mean to be old? Yechezkel says when he gets a prophecy in the exile, Va'ani b'soch ha-gola, I'm in the exile. He's on a river. It's called Nahar Kvar. Nahar Kvar. What does it mean, Kvar?
Ready was.
That's it. Ready was. It's over. It's over. My life is over. There are people. They might be 20 years old. I can't change. I can't reconsider. I can't explore. It's all done. It's all set. It's all done. It's kvar. It's over. Reb Nachman says, you can't live a life like that. Every day is chadashim labakarim. Every day you wash netilas yadayim is because today, the Rashba says, Mishnah Berurah quoted, because today is a new day. Yesterday I struggled with my marriage. Yesterday I struggled with my ruchnias. Yesterday I struggled with my kids. Doesn't matter. Today is a new day. If a person says, oh, kvar, I was a terrible parent. It's over. Can't try it again. That's the antithesis of Yiddishkeit. That's number one. But there's another element, I feel, which is that a person, when we think back to our own childhood, there's a certain enthusiasm that goes with youthfulness. Right? Some of us can think back, if we have good memory, to a Chumash party that we had when we were a kid. For some of us, maybe it was an NCSY Shabbat when we were in high school. For some of us, maybe it was a camp experience. You're under the sun, under the stars, you're making Havdalah Motzoi Shabbos. For some of us, maybe it was the time in Israel. We had an experience where it was learning, whatever it was. And it was inspired. And it was exciting. Yeah, what happens when you get old is it's not so exciting anymore. You know, we're sitting, let's not get too excited. But that's not what Yiddishkeit is about either. Can we find ways, even as we get older, when we're 25 or 35 or 45, to still find sparks of excitement? Well, if we're old, then it's kvar, then we can't. But maybe we still can. Maybe we could still be a Nar Yisrael. There was a great, a genius, a brilliant scholar, huge Talmud Chacham, big, amazing, both Talmud Chacham and scholars. His name was Rav Chaim Heller. See, he escaped Europe in the late 1930s. He had a yeshiva in Berlin. Escaped Europe, came to live on the Upper West Side. And Dr. Belkin, the president of YU, hired tons of Rosh Yeshiva who had escaped Europe. These were great Gaonim. So he lived on the Upper West Side, and Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik, used to visit him because he was a younger contemporary of Rav Chaim Heller. So when Rav Chaim Heller passed away, the Rav gave a hesped for him. And he said that Rav Chaim Heller was like a child. What did he mean he was like a child? Rav Chaim Heller was one of the most sophisticated Eastern European German geniuses, intellectuals. But he said his emunah was like a child. It was so simple and fulfilling and meaningful. So I think that's what we need to think about. The Rebbe, I think, is inviting us at any age to think about, can we open our imagination and see ourselves again as a nar? And then pose the next question, which we're going to get to next week, which is, Ashrecha, are we happy? I'll tell you one parable and we'll pick it up next week, because we've got to be home by 9 o'clock, otherwise you know what happens. My grandmother, Aleha Hashalom, I'm imagining it happened to her, but it didn't. She once came to visit us. She was 80. We just moved to Chicago. So she came from Israel. So I had to order her a wheelchair. So you can imagine, you know, 80-year-old woman, she gets on the wheelchair. You know, they take a bottom of O'Hare. So you wait at the carousel. Now, they don't put the 80-year-old women in the wheelchair. They don't put them next to the carousel because they're going to get mauled by all the travelers. So they put them in the back, you know, by the like that little railing thing. And they sit there with the custodian, you know, the schlepper guy. So the schlepper is standing there. So you have an elderly woman. She says, I have a suitcase. He's going to go get the suitcase. What does your suitcase look like? It's a black Rolly. Easy, right? Shkoyach. So the guy goes. He goes to the belt. He's waiting. The conveyor is coming around. Sees a black suitcase. So he picks it up. The woman is standing in the back. She starts waving. No, not the right suitcase. He puts it down, picks up another one, holds it up. She's still in the back. No, not the right suitcase. Waits a little longer, coming more and more people grabbing b'chule. The guy picks up a suitcase. She says, bring it here. I got to check it. So she starts looking. She looks at the tag. She looks at the tag. She can hardly see the tag. She says, yes, this is my suitcase. So the guy says to her, he says, I don't understand. The first two, you were so far away, and yet you knew it wasn't my suitcase. And this one, you had to look at it carefully. How did you know that this was your suitcase? How did you know more that the other ones were not your suitcase? She said, I'll tell you. Look at me. How heavy of a suitcase do you think I can carry? When you picked up the first two suitcases, I saw you had to really lift them. I knew right away, it's not my suitcase. It's not my suitcase, it's the wrong suitcase. This one I had to check. If our Yiddishkeit is such a burden that it's like carrying a suitcase full of bowling balls, it's not the right suitcase. We have to figure out, what does it mean, Ashrecha, that we should be happy, we should decide that we want to choose Yiddishkeit. Shkoyach! Have a great week!